It is Tuesday, March 12, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, controversial hogs and not-so-controversial pigs. Jacqueline Froelich reports on the tumult surrounding a proposed hog farm operation near the Buffalo River. And Ozark Literacy nears the end of their pigsibition project that has a couple dozen giant pigs leaping all over Fayetteville.
Plus, the United Way of Northwest Arkansas welcomes hundreds of volunteers to do work tomorrow. And James Galway talks about his upcoming performance at Walton Arts Center and the snack he uses to relax when on a world tour.
But first, Medicaid expansion is one of the big questions of this legislative session in Little Rock, and it has yet to be answered. Yesterday, House Majority Leader Bruce Westerman told reporters lawmakers are still weighing the issue in light of news they received 2 weeks ago that the state could opt to use federal money that would have gone to a Medicaid expansion to give the same people private health coverage. Westerman says lawmakers have yet to come up with a solid proposal, but they're working on something that might require co-payments or premiums.
I think there's some creative things we can do there that can provide good assistance to those who are in need of the health care benefits and do it in a cost-effective, innovative way that saves the state money, and the more people that are on the existing Medicaid system that we could get under this option would be better off down the road.
Westerman says in the meantime, lawmakers will be meeting with an independent auditor to assess the state's Medicaid system as it is currently before moving forward with a decision on expanding health coverage in the state.
Now that the Arkansas legislature has overturned the governor's vetoes of two abortion bills, lawmakers continue to discuss possible outcomes from the changes. In interviews with Talk Business Arkansas, Democratic Representative Reginald Murdoch of Marianna and Republican Representative Ann Clemmer of Benton further discussed Arkansas's 12 and 20-week bans on abortion. Murdoch says public opinion from some national news outlets have already referred to the state's actions as embarrassing.
The New York Post or New York Times maybe they put out a piece that talked about, what happened in Arkansas was shameful, that we're going to be in litigation and that it's going to be overturned and that, you know, that we're wasting taxpayer dollars. That's their view on it, as well as many others that think that we probably went down a road that's not legally correct anyway.
Clemmer disagrees. She says legal challenges are expected, but passage of the bans was a great victory.
This issue, more than any other, shows the real cultural divide in this country. But I mean, when I'm in Saline County, I mean, it's people are hugging me, coming up to me, crying, thanking me for running this bill. I mean, it is different, but we are not like the rest of the world, and I think this bill makes a statement.
Clemmer says there have been conflicting federal court rulings on 20-week abortion bans in Idaho and Arizona, and it may be time to revisit the Roe versus Wade decision by the Supreme Court. We'll have more from that conversation tomorrow on Ozarks at Large.
If you see smoke tomorrow in North Fayetteville, there's likely no cause for alarm. The city's Parks and Recreation Department will be conducting controlled burns near Lake Fayetteville. Parks Maintenance Superintendent Byron Humphrey says that the two burns near the lake are scheduled for two different reasons.
One is a prairie restoration area. It's a project that we've been doing for about 4 years now, where we're converting, I would say maybe restoring an area back to native prairie. And so we're using the control burns as a measure to control some of the invasive plants out there. And then the second burn is on the Lake Fayetteville Dam. And that's just to control vegetation as part of the requirements to upkeep the dam.
Humphrey says while the burns are being conducted, the asphalt and nature trails at the lake will be closed because of their close proximity to the burn area. He says for the burn to take place, weather conditions such as wind direction and humidity have to be taken into account. If conditions aren't favorable tomorrow morning, the burn will be rescheduled.
Three of Arkansas's four largest metro areas saw double-digit gains in numbers of homes sold during January. That's according to the latest Arkansas home sales report by the City Wire. Home sales in the state rose nearly 15% when compared to sales numbers for January 2012. Home sales rose nearly 26% in central Arkansas, nearly 25% in the Jonesboro area, and just more than 7% in northwest Arkansas. Meanwhile, home sales were down for the month by nearly 20% in the Fort Smith metro area, with the average sale price diving 11%. The latest data shows a continuing trend, at least for the month of January. In the past 3 years, home sales have grown in each of the Northwest Arkansas, Central Arkansas, and Jonesboro areas, while home sales have declined for the last 3 years in the Fort Smith metro area.
a longtime economics professor at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, has died. 67-year-old Joseph A. Ziegler passed away Saturday in Fayetteville. He was a professor of economics for 40 years at the Walton College of Business. He joined the University of Arkansas faculty in 1973 after 2 years at Clemson in South Carolina. He served as chair of the UA's Department of Economics from 1987 to 2009. A time period that was marked by a dramatic increase in the department's domestic and international reputation. For information regarding funeral and memorial arrangements, you can visit newswire.uark.edu.
Just as a reminder, the Fayetteville City Council tonight will hold a public input session regarding the design of the planned parking deck for the downtown entertainment district. The input session will be held following the City Council's 4:30 agenda session at the City Administration Building on Mountain Street. The city's parking deck team and project design contractors will present different design options for public comment and discussion.
Mostly clear tonight, still winter. Lows will be in the mid-20s in northwest Arkansas, around 30 tonight for a low for much of the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, sunshine, highs from the lower to mid-50s across the region. And for tomorrow night, partly cloudy, lows in the lower to mid-30s.
Of farms operate on the Buffalo River watershed and have for generations. But a new industrial swine farm, the first of its kind in the state, is under construction near Mount Judy in Newton County. And as Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, a coalition of unlikely opponents have emerged to block it.
The Buffalo National River courses through a half dozen Ozark counties, a patchwork of wilderness and small farms. But west of Mount Judy in Newton County, adjacent to Big Creek, tributary to the Buffalo, an intensive swine breeding operation is under construction. CNH Hog Farms will house up to 4,000 sows, boars, and pigs in metal concrete floored barns. Perpetually pregnant and nursing sows will be confined to gestation and farrowing or nursing crates. After several weeks, piglets will be gathered in batch pens and fed until they reach slaughter weight. The barns will be washed out daily, wastewater piped to holding tanks, settling ponds, then stored in a large clay-lined lagoon. This so-called confined feeding animal operation, or CAFO, was permitted by the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality, ADEQ Deputy Director Ryan Benefield.
This is the first one in the state to be permitted through the NPDES program.
That's EPA Clean Water Act jargon, NPDES, the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System. In this case, more than 2 million gallons of liquid hog manure discharged annually, all of it spread onto surrounding pastures. New EPA CAFO rules were proposed in Arkansas several years ago. Notices were posted in the state newspaper, and 6 public meetings were held. The agency received a dozen comments, and a new general permit went into effect in November 2011. Then, last June, CNH Hog Farms was the first to apply to ADEQ for a CAFO permit. ADEQ posted notice on its website for 30 days. No comments were received because few people saw it. CNH Hog Farms owner Jason Henson declined talking on record about his business, but ADEQ Deputy Director Ryan Benefield said he will be held in strict compliance.
We designed the general permit that they're operating under to be protective of the environment regardless of where the facility is located within the state. And if they follow the terms of the general permit and their nutrient management plan, they should be able to operate without any effect on Big Creek or the Buffalo National River.
But Kevin Cherie, U.S. National Park Service Superintendent in charge of the Buffalo National River, says that the farm poses a threat. He first heard about the hog farm last December, so Cherie contacted ADEQ with questions and concerns.
You know, we're fairly convinced of the potential negative impacts that it could have on the water quality and therefore the concerns over public health and safety.
Kevin Tree was told that the state's new CAFO permit provides no exceptions for the Buffalo National River watershed. National Park Service staff routinely monitor water quality on the Buffalo and its tributaries, giving it high marks. USDA Arkansas Farm Service Agency, which is providing a loan to CNH Hog Farms, conducted an environmental assessment, and FSA listed the National Park Service as a cooperating agency. Not true, said Kevin Cherie.
Yeah, we were disappointed because we share a building we lease here in Harrison with the USDA. And, no one thought it, significant enough to notify us.
FSA's environmental assessment found the swine factory farm will have no significant impact on the watershed. Superintendent Kevin Cherie and his staff shredded that study, contacting FSA in late February, documenting 45 mistakes. When queried for this report, FSA State Director Linda Newkirk said she'd not had an opportunity to review Cherie's complaint, so could not comment on that, nor why she included the National Park Service as a cooperative agency. Superintendent Kevin Cherie.
That it didn't raise a level of concern for anyone living within the state that's involved in this type of processing of paperwork is just it's discouraging.
In a letter of complaint to ADEQ, Superintendent Cherie requested a moratorium on CAFOs be placed on the watershed until further notice. While ADEQ cannot do such a thing, the Arkansas Pollution Control and Ecology Commission can and has. In October of 1992, Randall Mathis, then director of the commission, at the time the state's lead environmental authority, ordered a 2-year moratorium placed on water discharge permits for any new hog and dairy operations on the watershed. Of 40 large hog, poultry, and dairy farms then operating in the region, half were found to be in violation. Plus, a new 500 swine breeding operation was in the works, just a quarter of a mile away from the Buffalo. PC&E Commissioner Randall Mathis also ordered a water quality study and monitoring program, which all led to stricter regulations and fewer farms over the years. That controversial moratorium also led to a legislative shakedown of PC&E a year later. Today, only the full commission, not one individual, can order a moratorium on agricultural permits. On March 4th, 150 concerned citizens packed the regular monthly meeting of the Newton County Quorum Court. Clinton Daniels, a cattle farmer and Quorum Court member, was there.
The Quorum Court is in full support of the hog operation.
And Clinton Daniels is puzzled why opponents don't seem worried about the impact 1.5 million annual visitors and hundreds of imported Rocky Mountain elk are having on the river.
And they stand in the water about two-thirds of the time in the summertime, so they're not too concerned about it either, it sounds to me like.
Lots of park visitors stop off at the Ozark Cafe in Jasper for a breakfast of eggs and bacon. Americans consume as much as 50 pounds of pork per year, on average. Michael Doherty slathers lard gravy over hot biscuits this morning. He's president of the Buffalo River Chamber of Commerce and has been fielding lots of questions about the hog farm just 15 miles northeast of here.
I'm hearing from everyone, and that literally all day long, 50, 60 emails coming from everywhere.
Including recreationists and businesses that normally don't take an environmental stand.
And we're creating, and we just arrived at a name, we're creating a Buffalo River Watershed Alliance. And we're throwing down the gauntlet, working in a broad coalition to identify strategies that will manage these sorts of situations.
Unlike most watershed advocates, Doherty supports clear cuts of forest and herbicide applications to expand elk habitat on the watershed, a popular tourist draw, but opposes the factory farm. The Buffalo River Chamber of Commerce counts 60 members, including canoe and kayak vendors.
It will be the Pupelo. So we'll be floating down the Pupelo.
Seated across from him is kayaker Ellie Wilson.
You know, the smell of cow manure, horse manure, pig manure, that's the smell of money, but not in these kinds of concentrations. And if no one has ever seen or observed a factory chicken, pork, turkey, whatever, fill in the blank operation, I think they would be shocked, they would be appalled. People wouldn't see the difference in the buffalo the first day, the first week, the first month, but over time, all the runoff, all the contamination is going to change the river in ways that people can't even imagine.
Ellie Wilson was raised on a Texas cattle ranch, so knows what she's talking about. Still, she's going to work with the new alliance to block the hog farm. Among numerous small cow, calf, and cattle ranches on the Buffalo River watershed are 8 poultry factory farms. 6 are turkey operations, which raise batches of 30,000 birds, along with 2 20,000 breeder hen farms. These are not CAFOs. They're too small, but poultry ops are strictly regulated by the Arkansas Natural Resources Commission. And while ADEQ has control over hog waste, it doesn't regulate air emissions, which contains ammonia, hydrogen sulfide, and methane, a greenhouse gas. According to its permit, CNH Hog Farms will use odor suppression technology, but opponents say fumes from the operations place neighbors and a nearby school district at risk. Mount Judy School District Superintendent Richard Denniston disagrees. He says he's not heard one complaint about the hog farm.
I'm telling you, they wouldn't do anything to harm Newton County, the school. It's 200% welcoming a program that's going to bring more assessment to Newton County, which is one of the poorest counties in the state of Arkansas. It's going to bring jobs.
Agriculture is the backbone of the local economy, Denniston says. But so is recreational tourism. The Buffalo River runs free thanks to the Ozark Society, which staved off a U.S. Army Corps of Engineers impoundment back in the 1960s. That effort led to the National Park Service to survey this stream and designate it as our nation's first national river in 1972. Ozark Society President Bob Cross is an emeritus professor of chemical engineering at the University of Arkansas. He had no idea a hog CAFO had been permitted on the historic watershed.
Well, I was shocked that this was happening. I was disappointed that we didn't see it coming and weren't aware of even the possibility of something like this.
Bob Cross says he's sympathetic to the farmer in pursuit of a livelihood.
But in the broader picture, I think it's just almost out of the question that an operation of that magnitude should be within 6 miles of the Buffalo and on one of their tributaries of the Buffalo River.
National Geographic Society recently declared the Buffalo National River as one of the top 10 underappreciated parks in the United States, citing the efforts of Arkansas conservationists who championed protection of the watershed. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
This is Ozarks at Large. Tomorrow, hundreds of people in Northwest Arkansas will not report to their jobs. They're not playing hooky. They're volunteering. Tomorrow is the annual Live United Day, sponsored by United Way of Northwest Arkansas. Nonprofit organizations in Benton, Madison, and Washington counties in Arkansas and McDonald County in Missouri have made requests for tasks to be done through volunteer labor. Julie Petrie is the manager of marketing and communications for United Way of Northwest Arkansas.
Any nonprofit is allowed to go to our Volunteer Center website, which is volunteernwa.org, and post a project. And that project can be really anything. You name it, we've probably seen it. And they post that on there and kind of say about how many volunteers they need. And then people go and find a project that looks interesting to them, sign up, and then they head out on that day, on Live United Day, and go and get their work on.
It's tomorrow. It's a Wednesday. Is there a specific reason why it's in the middle of the work? I mean, people take work off. Many, I'm sure, use a vacation day.
No, actually, it is a wonderful team-building opportunity. So we get a lot of corporate teams that go out and volunteer. And, you know, one of the great things about our community is that a lot of the businesses and corporations here promote volunteerism. They want to give back to their community. So that's kind of one of the reasons that we put it in the middle of the work week. Getting paid to volunteer.
Any idea how many people tomorrow will be involved in Live United Day?
The numbers are still coming in, but it's going to be over 400.
Wow. Can this serve as sort of a catalyst that, okay, this is great that it's one day, but perhaps you're matching up nonprofits and people into relationships that might exist beyond tomorrow?
You know, that is really what we are hoping for. We are hoping that someone, you know, even if it's just one person, we're hoping that they will go volunteer at a nonprofit and find something that they love, something that they are passionate about, and they're going to build a relationship with this organization, and they're going to start volunteering there year-round.
What are some of the examples of things that will be happening tomorrow throughout the four counties?
Oh, goodness. We have everything from landscaping, painting stripes in a parking lot, cleaning and organizing a thrift shop, washing windows. Gosh, you name it. It's on the list. Doing art projects with children, cleaning a kitchen, organizing paperwork, picking up trash. There's all kinds of stuff. There's something for everybody.
It sounds like a lot of these projects are things that small staff nonprofits have been meaning to do for the past 11 or 12 months, but just haven't had the personnel to do it.
It really is. Nonprofits run on a very tight budget. They're usually pretty low in staff numbers, and any money that they can save by having volunteers come and help them out with work, that money goes back into providing services that are so needed in our community.
Now, I know you said the numbers are still coming in. Is it too late at this hour for someone who might be hearing this who decides that they too would like to be part of Live United Day? Is it too late to sign up?
Oh, Kyle, it's never too late. Go to the website. It's volunteernwa.org. Go to the website. There's a picture right there on that homepage. You can click on that, find a project that sounds interesting to you, and sign up. It's free. It's easy. It's fast. We make it as painless as possible. We want you out there volunteering. And bonus, you get a free Live United T-shirt.
Julie Petrie is Manager of Marketing Communications at United Way of Northwest Arkansas. Julie, thank you very much, and have a fulfilling and long day tomorrow.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm excited about it.
Couple of quick notes. Tonight, Robert Randolph and the Family Band will be at George's Majestic Lounge on Dixon in Fayetteville. Tickets say the show begins at 9, and opening is the 1-ounce jig.
Yes, a high-energy show tonight.
Really? I don't know anything about the band.
They're incredible.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Are they on their way to South by Southwest, maybe?
Probably. That would not be a surprise.
Seems like a lot of people. What did I hear yesterday? It's the South by Blow-By. Have you heard that?
Oh, no. That's what places like Fayetteville get?
That's what I heard.
I like that
somebody
term.
Called it that. I don't know if it was their term or if that's like an official thing that people use or an unofficial official term that people use, but I thought it was funny.
Yeah. So Robert Randolph has played George's before, and it's always a great show, and you'll feel sore tomorrow because you'll be dancing.
Okay.
Now, not quite as fun as what you got to tell people.
Okay.
The Robert Randolph Show. Beginning tomorrow in Bentonville, Northwest 2nd Street between Northwest D and Northwest F, closed and will remain closed for 3 weeks. They're replacing a sewer main that's located in the street. Now, if you do live in that part, you'll still be able to go in and out.
Okay. Friday, there's a groundbreaking of sorts. There's a ceremony for the Melba Shoemaker Southern Regional National Child Protection Training Center at Northwest Arkansas Community College.
People in the future will be using the letters on that
as opposed
to the official name, yes.
I'm sure. And that's at 10:30 in the morning, Friday morning. The event will actually mark the beginning of the renovation of the transformation of the former Highlands Oncology Building into the new center. I know you and I were talking about that before we went on air, how
yes.
I'd done a story, I think, when they first announced that that's what they were doing, and then you did a story a while after.
That was kind of a discussion about where the fundraising was.
Right.
They had hit, at that point, a very high milestone.
Yes,
and they knew they now knew it was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And this will be in the middle of the United States, and there will be mock courtrooms in there. It's mm-hmm. so police and legal and defense people can figure out situations where children have been abused, whether it's interviewing them
mm-hmm.
or what would happen in the courtroom, things like that.
Right. Well, I'm always happy when people can reuse buildings like that, you know,
yes.
instead of them just sitting there.
Yes, and this is a big reuse. Finally, a week from Saturday, March 23rd, Emmy winner Lawrence Luckinbill, who you and I had the opportunity
to
see at a Theater Squared event late last year.
Their gala,
their gala
in the fall.
He will be back in Arkansas, his home state, presenting excerpts from his one-man shows at the Winthrop Rockefeller Institute. It's part of the Institute's Film Forum that takes place in Petit Jean Mountain. That event is open to the public. You can learn more at the Winthrop Rockefeller Institute website.
On the next Fresh Air, Adrian Young, a former hip-hop DJ who's now a composer and producer and takes his inspiration from the soul music of the 60s and European film composers like Ennio Morricone. Young produced the new Ghostface Killa album and produced and co-wrote a new album with William Hart, who was the lead singer of the Delfonics. Join us.
Fresh Air, this evening, beginning at 6 after All Things Considered on KUAF 91.3 FM.
It is Tuesday, March 12th, 2013, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda, and joining me now is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Fashion Week.
It is.
But there's a fashion event at the university in Fayetteville tonight that you really should go check out.
Okay.
There's an exhibit opening today in the Ann Kittrell Gallery of 6 dresses, gorgeous, gorgeous, amazing evening dresses, all made out of condoms.
I've seen a couple of shots of 2 of them, I think, so I would be very interested to see the rest, because the pictures that I got, or wherever, maybe I saw them on the flyer, the Fayetteville flyer, and so they're small, and they look like really nice dresses, and then when you click on them, you can see all of the material that they used for is insane.
They're just amazing. It's an artist named Adriana Bertini. She's from Brazil, and she worked with some children who were HIV or AIDS positive and decided she wanted to do some kind of fashion statement with condoms. So she made a t-shirt with like a flower made out of condoms, and then they turned into these evening dresses that have as many as 80,000 condoms in one dress.
Wow.
There's a black one. There's a screaming green one. Then there's a short dress that's a whole bunch of different colors and looks like it's maybe made out of rubber bands. There's a wedding dress. They're amazing. And, of course, the whole idea is to bring awareness to HIV and AIDS and to say that a condom should be an accessory you always have with you.
Mm-hmm.
Really fascinating. There's a reception at 6:30 tonight, and then she will be here and speak at 7 o'clock. At the Multicultural Center in the Arkansas Union. You can find out more by Googling Adriana Bertini. You will be fascinated. There's also an archaeology lecture tonight that I've been waiting for. Jamie Lockhart from the Arkansas Archaeological Society, who's going to be talking about modern technology and archaeology at the protohistoric Carden Bottom site. Don't let that scare you. This is the guy that I wrote about that uses things like ground-penetrating radar before the archaeologists get in and dig. And it's fascinating. And he will speak at 7 o'clock at the Arkansas Archaeological Survey in Fayetteville.
All right. Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Over the past several months, some pretty big pigs have started popping up in the area, mostly in Fayetteville. There is even one inside the Fayetteville Public Library. These pigs are part of an ambitious project to help raise awareness and money for Ozark literacy and for local artists. Thursday night, some of the giant hogs will be auctioned off at the town center on the Fayetteville Square. Recently, Wendy Poole, the executive director of Ozark Literacy, and Tracy Beckers from the organization's board of directors came to our studio to explain how the whole pig exhibition program has worked.
If you bought at a certain level, we had top hog sponsors. If they bought at a certain level, they got to keep their pig. And then any nonprofit that bought a pig or we helped them buy a pig, we let them keep their pig. So 11 of the pigs actually are the ones that are going back. And we have it on a poster, and you can see it on our website, all the different pigs that are going back. So not only did the sponsor buy a pig with their first amount of money, but that now it's going to be re-auctioned off. They've had it on display all this time, and now it gets to, you know, be recycled, if you will, and somebody else will get to take it home.
I know there are some people who are already talking about they don't know. And like you said, you can see on the poster, I'm sure perhaps on the website, which ones will be up for auction. There's some people asking, like, say the one that's across the street from where we are right now in the library. Is that one going to be available, or is that one spoken for?
That one is When Pigs Fly.
When Pigs Fly.
And Ronnie Sparkman was the artist, and that is Tyson Foods. And no, it's not going to be up for auction. I don't know how long it will be at the library, but Tyson Foods and Fayetteville Public Library will negotiate that.
This, of course, was Ozark Literacy, its own nonprofit. This was a way to help fund Ozark Literacy.
We wanted to raise awareness, really, about literacy and about our school. We have about 300 students, and we teach literacy or reading, or if you want, to English speakers or immigrants. So we're out there trying to raise the message that in Arkansas, that one out of five people read below a fifth grade level. But in Northwest Arkansas, we have it a little bit better. One out of 11 are considered illiterate. So we think it's a great message, but we wanted to team up with the artists in the community. So all together, this, and we paid the artists, so they didn't just volunteer their time, although they probably think that by now, because what we give them as a stipend is not as much as they would want, probably because they spend a lot of time or they live with this pig. But so we say that Piggies Go to Market, the culmination of the whole pig exhibition, a community art project, it is a celebration of our community's support and passion for the arts and education. So it's, we just kind of did a big project, but we wanted to raise awareness about literacy, and we also wanted to show off Fayetteville and the beauty of all of our local artists and industry.
Now, it's been a year since you rolled them out. This has been more than a year in the making. If you knew then what you know now, what would have, because this would have been,
wow, that's a loaded question.
This is an ambitious project, because you had to have 25, and these are not small pigs.
Oh, they're 175 pounds.
Yeah, and you were hauling them places. You had to get them to the artists. The artists had to get done. You had to get them in front of the places where the sponsors wanted them.
And then we have to haul them back.
And they had to be clear coated.
Yes.
So there was another step in between that.
And then we have to repair them. Well, what I would do differently is one thing. I would hire five people.
Oh.
Wouldn't you?
Yes.
And, you know, hopefully have the money to pay for that.
But this was, I mean, there were some things then in the course of this event that were kind of surprises or?
Oh, huge. Because Tracy brought the idea to me a long, long time ago. And when we finally decided to present it to the board, we had to do all this research on, well, how are we going to do this in Fayetteville? Because it's patterned after Chicago cows.
Right.
And but nobody, and everybody does this all over America. There are all kinds of these parades. So we did the research, and we had to make it special to Fayetteville. So, yeah, we learned a lot. And here's a good thing. This will make all the artists in Fayetteville really, really happy. We, as Ozark Literacy, raised money. Yeah, we've raised over $100,000 so far. But we've given back to the art community $55,000.
Wow.
So we weren't being selfish, and we felt really proud that we kept it absolutely local. Our Mike Davis was the original sculptor, and then Glenn Samuels in Hinesville actually did all the fiberglass. So a lot of these projects are not local, and they go outside of the state and the region to do it. And so that's what makes ours so very special, I think, is that it's all local. All the money stayed here.
A couple of practical questions for people who are looking to buy a pig. One, are you responsible for taking the pig away?
Yes. You mean that night?
Yes.
Yes. Well, we probably would give them a day.
Okay.
And because the city loves this project and they have embraced us. And the city has given us all kinds of permissions to leave our pigs certain places for temporary times. So, yeah, we want them to come and get it that night with their pickup. That's all they need is a pickup and some ties. But and we'll help load them up and stuff.
Because, you know, sometimes you go to a fundraiser and you don't realize you're going to buy something.
That's right.
And you walk away with it. But this isn't, you know, a gift certificate for a massage. This is,
this is
you're going to have to.
Yeah, they have to pick it up the next
There's
day.
There's some logistics to it.
Yes.
Okay, so you have a bit of a window. Then, what do you think people will do with them?
I think people will put them in their garden.
I had a pig on my front porch for about a month, and it just looked so cute out there. I could really see it a little more into the garden itself. But, you know, once you have it planted among your bushes and trees, and it's adorable, and it really has a great pop to it. The designs of the pigs, all 11 of them, are just absolutely beautiful.
Tracy Beckers is on the board of directors for Ozark Literacy. Wendy Poole is the executive director of the agency. The finale of the Pig Exhibition Project, titled Piggies Go to Market, is Thursday night at the Fayetteville Town Center, beginning at 6. For more information, pigsabition.org.
There is a growing number of places you can see visual arts throughout our listening area. For example, each month, the Art Center of the Ozarks hangs a new exhibit in its galleries. During the month of March, the ACO is featuring the 14th annual Celebrate Art Showcase, which includes more than 300 pieces of artwork created by young artists in kindergarten through 8th grade. The Center for Art and Education in Van Buren has two exhibits this month, including one titled Art Times Two, Impressions of Life from Two Sisters. Submerged, a solo exhibition of photographic works by Kenda North, is now on display at the Fine Arts Gallery on the University of Arkansas campus in Fayetteville. There will be a closing reception March 28th in the gallery, which will be followed by a visiting artist lecture at 6:30. The Fayetteville Underground is also hosting two guest artists this month. The first is Helen Kwiatkowski, who is a professor at the University of Mary Hardin Baylor in Belton, Texas. Helen, who is an oil painter, says she works on different series of paintings at the same time and for different reasons. The Roxy series features her 14-year-old red-blue healer, and the Mary series features images of the Virgin Mary. Helen explains she grew up Catholic and she still feels very close to that image. She first began work on another series called The Little Helens in 1998.
The reason why they're called that is because I based the very first one on a photograph of myself. And I did it when my dad passed away. And so I did it as kind of a little cleansing, a little bit of a self-grief counseling. And after I did the first one, I did another one, and I did another one, and people started commenting on them and saying how much they related to them. And I thought, I was really puzzled by that because they were of me, and I didn't really think they were relatable to other people. But apparently they were, and people kept insisting that I looked, that the paintings looked like them, even though they didn't physically look like them. And it took me a while to make that connection, that they were talking about the demeanor of the character and the environment or the any number of things.
Helen has continued painting pieces and estimates there are now more than 40 of them in the series. Several of them are on display at the Fayetteville Underground, as well as a few works from her Mary series, some bird paintings, and a handful of collages. Helen says she ran out of photos of herself some time ago, and she has used a model that resembles the younger version of herself to create paintings. Helen says the original paintings in the series were true, to a degree, to the environment of the photograph, but now she has started creating different environments, which has resulted in the paintings having brightly colored and patterned backgrounds. While the backgrounds, as well as the characters' clothes, may change from piece to piece, the young brunette with bangs and a short haircut is always wearing a pair of sunglasses.
I do think sometimes there is significance to the sunglasses, and I think sometimes there is not. And I think it depends on the painting, too, because I think there's something about seeing somebody's eyes that are that identifies them in a very unique and personal way. So when I put the sunglasses on her, she becomes a little more universal to people, I think. I think that's generally why I keep them on. And in some ways, I find them to be like her kind of protection and the way she/I look at the world. I mean, I choose to look at the world as a place of goodness. That's how I choose to look at the world. So that's probably why the backgrounds are always like super brightly painted and you know, full of lots of color and brightness and what I'm calling now, I'm in my fearless color stage.
And it's that optimism about the world that Helen hopes people will take away from viewing her work.
You know, as an artist, you know, you want people to be able to relate to them how they relate to them for any given moment. Okay, so I think I'm okay with somebody coming in and saying, these paintings are beautiful, or these paintings have beautiful color, and they make me happy to look at. And that's enough. Or they can say, wow, this, I relate to this because of such and such. It can vary from time to time, just depending on how you feel. I think we live in a world that's full of bad things and lots of problems, and I'm aware of them, and I try to do what I can for them. But I think when people look at my paintings, I want them to see a little bit of beauty, because, you know, intermixed in all the big mess that we've made for our planet and our politics and, you know, our health, there is beauty. And so I think that's probably what I'd like for them to see.
Another visiting artist at the Fayetteville Underground this month is Todd Williams. Todd lives in Siloam Springs and says there are about 7 galleries across the country that represent his art. During this month's show, he will have a number of oil paintings on display that feature landscapes, figurative work, and some architectural structures he saw while teaching a workshop in Tuscany last June. For his work featuring people, Todd often uses real models, but his volunteers aren't always people he knows. He explains that a young local woman named Grace, who served as one of his models, started out as a stranger he first saw at a subway. Todd says he loved her eyes and facial structures and thought she would make a great model.
I didn't actually approach her at Subway. It was like later when I saw her and my wife was with me, and then we approached her because I saw her eating at this Chinese restaurant. And then I said, hey, you know, I'm not a weirdo, you know, kind of thing. But I would really love to use you as a model for some of my paintings. And so she agreed, and her father was actually a police officer in Siloam Springs, so it all worked out.
Todd studied at the Kansas City Art Institute and worked for Hallmark Cards as well as Dayspring Cards before he began pursuing fine art full-time about a decade ago. He creates oil paintings and often paints in plein air, a French expression that means in the open air. Painting outside can pose some issues, so what is it that Todd likes so much about it?
Just being out in God's nature. I mean, just really, you know, seeing how the light hits the subject, you know, whether that's a structure or a field or a river or a stream. It's kind of, to me, it's kind of magical. And when I'm painting outdoors, it's like in the moment. And so for me, it's like that day, that time, that moment, I'm just capturing that time. And then I have that on a two-dimensional surface that I can then share with others.
Todd explains plein air painters have about a 3-hour window to work with. He says he tries to look for a location he's familiar with and one that he's seen at different points of the day, so he knows where the light will be 3 hours from when he starts painting.
With that knowledge, and then picking that location, you know, it's just kind of the inspiration behind it, but it's really knowing that in the end, the light will be kind of where I want it to be, and it'll kind of be reacting in a certain way that I can kind of create the finishing touches on the piece. And so it's all about building a foundation, kind of, and then building up to that moment, which for artists we call the payoff. And it's like, you know, for maybe the viewer, it's like the wow of it. It's like really laying in the highlights. It's laying in some of the thicker strokes, some of the highest chroma, some of the lightest light, some of the darkest dark. It's the calligraphy of painting. And that really comes from I think just a lot of experience of painting outdoors.
Both Helen and Todd's work will be on display at the Fayetteville Underground through the month of March. Todd will participate in the gallery's weekly talk series Saturday morning. Beginning at 11, Todd will discuss the 7 keys to unlocking a great painting. The event is free and open to the public. More information is available at FayettevilleUnderground.com.
Thursday night, Walton Arts Center will offer an early start to the St. Patrick's Day weekend with a concert by one of Ireland's most beloved musicians, Sir James Galway. He's arguably the most famous flutist in the world. Thursday, Sir James Galway's legacy tour will make a stop in Fayetteville with a program that represents his diverse tastes, from classical to pop. Earlier this month, I talked to him just after he completed the Russian leg of his latest tour. I asked him about his career that has not only included playing with the London Symphony Orchestra and Royal Philharmonic, but also pop artists like the Chieftains, B.B. King, Ray Charles, and Henry Mancini.
You know, a lot of this came my way because I recorded Annie's song.
Oh, the John Denver song, yeah.
Yeah, so it blossomed for that. If it wasn't for John Denver, I wouldn't have been shaking hands with B.B. King or Roger Waters or any of these guys.
Just because that was what sort of...
That sparked it off because I recorded the tune and it got the number 2 in the charts. Number 1 in the charts was a song with no words, you know, one of these things.
Yes, I remember that.
Well, that was the one that I couldn't knock off.
Well, you know, the first part of your musical career, you were playing with wonderful orchestras and ensembles. What was it that inspired you to perhaps go out as a soloist?
Well, I always wanted to do it. I always wanted to do it because, you know, the flute has such a big, rich repertoire, which is unplayed, mostly because some of it's real difficult.
Right.
And I just wanted to get my hands on that. And while I was in the Berlin Philharmonic, while I was in the Royal Philharmonic in London, I used to do a lot of concerts and had a fairly good name because, you know, we did them with good people, good players. We did Bach sonatas and Cooper and Concert Royale for the first, what we thought was an original approach. It was right. The beginning of the original approach, you know, so then along came other people with different sorts of flutes and things, and it all blossomed from there out.
When you're putting together a program like you do for the Legacy Tour, which is what you'll be doing at Walton Arts Center, but imagine you want to pick selections that you can keep good company with for a matter of time, because you'll be with these performances the length of a tour.
Yeah, but, well, you know how it came about. I was having a look at some of these old programs, and you see sort of things like Madame So-and-so is going to sing an aria from The Barber of Seville, followed by Egmont Overture, followed by the second movement of the Beethoven Symphony Number 2.
Right.
these sort of programs, and I thought, you know, why don't we do this nowadays? Nowadays we have to go and listen to all of Mahler 6 when maybe only the first movement would do.
So more of a variety.
Yeah. And I mean, we could even have in the series, we could even have one old time concert.
There's Mozart and Debussy at the beginning, and then it's sort of chronological because then at the end you have Claude Bolling and Henry Mancini.
Yeah. Well, Henry was a good friend of mine, and I really enjoyed playing his music. But the best was knowing Henry was something, and that nobody should have missed. If anybody ever got a chance to meet Henry and didn't do it, they really missed out on some big-time thing. You know how I look at Henry Mancini? If you look at Verdi, for example, he sort of wrote the background music for Italy because he wrote 28 operas. Did you know that?
I didn't know it was that many, but I knew he wrote
28, and most of them are still being played. So that means all the choruses and everything, every Italian knows them. You know, they all know dun, dun, ding, da, dun, da, ding. They can all sing, these kids can all sing this.
Right.
And so, in a way, Verdi actually wrote the background music for Italy. And Henry did the same thing. for America. Because when you think, I mean, everybody knows Moon River. I mean, you have to be sort of from outer space not to know that.
Oh, one last question before I let you go. You travel so much. You're so busy. You've been described by some as the busiest man in classical music. When you need to rest, when you need to catch your breath, what do you do?
Oh, here's what I do. I put on a movie, get a pile of M&Ms, put my diet on hold, and go for it.
Any particular kind of movie?
Well, no, I have to have a happy ending because my wife is always watching as well. And if I could actually find a movie where nobody gets shot, murdered, or killed, she would love it too.
So a nice romantic comedy, perhaps?
Yeah,
some
well, you
M&Ms.
Know, we watch all sorts of things. You know, we just, we watch TV series, you know, like Revenge.
Well, we look forward to the performance from Mozart to Mancini at Walton Arts Center, and thank you so much for your time.
Okay, don't forget the M&Ms, Mozart and Mancini.
That's right. Thank you very much.
All right, Kyle.
All right.
All the best.
To you too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Sir James Galway will perform with his wife Jeannie, also a renowned flutist, at Walton Arts Center Thursday night. If you'd like to hear more from our conversation, including Sir James Galway talking about a place he's never performed but would like to, you can hear more from the discussion at our webpage, ozarksatlarge.com.
Imagine never being alone ever again. Imagine sharing your innermost thoughts with your best friend, a robot.
When we construct robots, we are changing ourselves. We are changing what we are willing to consider a relationship.
I'm Guy Raz, the promise and the peril of our robot overlords. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
The TED Radio Hour, Sunday at noon on KUAF 91.3 FM. KUAF is supported by Cure Search Walkathon for Children's Cancer Research. It takes place on Saturday, March 30th at 8 a.m. at Mud Creek Trail in Fayetteville. This fundraiser will include refreshments, entertainment, and more. Registration and more information are available on Facebook at Cure Search Walkathon-5K. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Hawkeye.
Hawkeye. Boy, it's good to be back.
Yeah, it seems like you've been gone. I mean, you've been in and out.
Well, I have been.
Well, I mean, a while. You've been gone. It seems like you've been gone a while. You've been in and out between all of your busy travels, adventures.
Was fortunate enough, honored to do play-by-play for the Razorback Sports Network.
Sorry
first.
That didn't go better.
Well, it was a six-game losing streak, if you count that. I did play-by-play.
For six-game for you?
Mm-hmm. I did a play-by-play for the Arkansas women versus Tennessee at Bud Walton.
Uh-huh.
That was a loss. Then I went to Arizona and a 0-for-4 baseball trip. And then I went to Duluth, Georgia for the women's basketball SEC tournament and lost in the first round there.
I'm not sure you should have pointed this out. They may not ask you back.
Well, get this. It was six games, two sports, three time zones. That's a losing streak.
The common denominator there is you. I don't
yes,
think you should have pointed that out. I don't think you should have pointed that out.
I'm saying that to say.
Are you apologizing? Was it your fault?
I don't.
Are you that?
There were a couple of 11-point second half leads that were lost. There was a 3-1 ninth inning loss to Pacific. It was just, I guess what I'm saying is don't expect me to be gone next March. I think they'll search for
they
somebody
might look
else.
For someone else.
Yes. It is good to be back, though.
Okay.
And thanks again to you
of course.
And Christina and Jacqueline and Katie and Tim for filling in while I was gone.
Of course.
Tomorrow, you and I are back together.
We are.
For another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. And mention the Ozark Literacy event that's Thursday night. I'll be part of that.
Dick
Trammell and I are emceeing that.
And he's helping auction off the pigs, I believe. Are you helping auction?
I think I just do everything else. He's the auction guy. I tell people where the silent auction is.
Okay.
Yes. All right. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Thanks so much for listening.
Have a happy Tuesday.